Hi, I'm Phil Williams, a North West based sea angling journalist. Today, however, I'm down in Sussex with IGFA guide Justin Anwell to record a four-part interview about his particular angling speciality, which is saltwater fly fishing for bass. Part three here is devoted to tackle and tactics. So when exploring, or if you're unsure just exactly where in the water column feeding fish might be, what line weight choice would you start with? And in which direction would you progress your search, either up or down?
Basically, we walk, don't we, on the springs and we drift it on the neaps. Very different patterns for very different techniques. Look at it this way round. I'm not saying you don't meet good quality fish on the intertidal skinny ground, okay, which is drying out and flooding. But skinny water is, what's the best way of explaining it? It probably holds a smaller class of fish because it holds less oxygen, which is less dense, which means that bigger fish can't breathe or are as comfortable in it, which is why bass is a deep water predator. It's deeper, it's denser, it holds more oxygen for them to breathe. Now, that's not to say that a big predator doesn't visit an intertidal zone. They do visit that ground and they do harvest that ground, but generally speaking, you need to match the hatch of what is in front of you. So if you use, let's say, small Clouser minnows, I think is a perfect interpretation of the small fry that you're going to find in that ground. Also, remember, you're working an intermediate line. I wouldn't suggest you work a floating line on the intertidal zone because it gets bullied by the capillary action of the waves. It sits on the top water column, which means that if a wave is cresting slightly, it's going to push it back to you too quickly. I would always use a 1 inch per second minimum density line, which means it cuts through very, very slowly and the line stays where it cuts through. If you're using an intermediate line, you're using a line that is not being required to take the fly down because you're probably working ground that is no more than 7 or 8 feet deep maximum. You're walking in it, for instance, so it can't be any more than 3 feet deep on your belly button. So even if you're a good cast and you push it 100 foot, it's probably going to be no more deeper than you are, which means if you worked a 7 to 8 foot leader with a small Clouser minnow, you've got the weight of the fly that will dredge the water column on your behalf. Unlike if you're drifting, you'll find that you need a heavier line to work the water which is deeper more comprehensively. We wouldn't use weighted flies on heavy lines because the line is doing the job, not the fly. So you may well, if let's say you worked a standard 3 inch, 4 inch per second line, which would be an average line, and then you go into 5, 6, 7, 8 inches per second. Well, because it's dumping at that sink rate, you might want to use just a deceiver or a flat wing, or I use a lot of cockroach patterns that I use for tarpon when I'm in the States fishing for different species, because the line's doing the job. But when you choose your flies, you choose it with your line, you choose it according to the light penetration of the water column. So for instance, in very, very bright conditions, you might find, because remember, bass is generally looking up, which is why it's got a dark back and eyes on the top of its head, you may well find if you use a very light pattern, in July at 2 o'clock in the afternoon, fish don't like, haven't got any eyelids, they don't like looking up. So you might want a better contrast fly. So I interpreted that when I was salmon fishing, and I'd use darker patterns, the greater the lighter penetration through the water column, than I would do, let's say, a lighter pattern, which if you're looking at, let's say, a chartreuse or white pattern, which would be a standard saltwater pattern here and abroad, you may well find that it mixes with the water column and light too aggressively. Remember, we're going back to the point where we're trying to find fish, but we're also trying to allow the fish to locate us. Give it a chance to find you. And I think that, I know I've seen fish coming into me at 25 to 35 feet. They have found you. If I'd have found that fish, I'd have cast right on his nose. So by definition, it's found you. So if you're weighting it, have a low density line on a weight forward. Weight forward because it's easier to cast. We've normally always got breeze. You have a relatively long leader in relation to dredging lines, which I cut my leaders down to 4.5 to 5 feet. Okay, we're deep, it's dark, it's dense down there. Bass aren't rude in coming forward. They'll eat a brick if you present it to them. And also the bigger flies are much easier to control on a shorter leader. I would say something about leader material. I tend to use very clear leader, normally monofilament under 15 pounds, which has got more stretch in it than fluorocarbon. Above 20 pounds, fluorocarbon is absolutely fine, but make sure it is clear. Sometimes I've had clients in the past insist upon coloured leader material, which is fine if you're maybe using it in turbid conditions or coarse fishing, or, you know, certainly the fishery that I have in Ireland, it's almost like a peaty clear stain. But sometimes the water column is so clean it actually attracts oxygen and it looks like an anchor chain going down. I'm not saying that the fish aren't always attracted to that, actually. I've had bass come in and try and take out crud that has been going through a weed bloom 4 feet up from the fly. They see something moving, there's a trigger point. But generally speaking, I think the better the refractive index of your leader material, the better off you are.
What then are your thoughts on rod choice for this particular type of work?
Standard rod would be an 8-weight, 9-foot fast taper. Fast because we're dealing with wind. Faster rods give you a better output with less effort if you know how to handle them. So it's a bit of a trade-off. If you're a novice, you're probably going to find it more difficult to deal with a faster action rod. Use the analogy of a motorbike. If you're riding a motorbike and you're probably going to be more successful as a motorcyclist, aren't you, if you graduate through the power ratio. So you start on a fizzy 50, you go up to a 125, 250, 355, 59, 50 Honda Fireblade. If you went 125 after your test up to 950, you would kill yourself. Everything's different. Same product, but you're not getting the most out of it, and it's probably dangerous for you. Danger in terms of you're not getting out what you can get out, because you don't know how to use it. So a mid-flex rod, certainly with a heavier line, if you're using a dredging line, will give you a better interpretation of your cast, I think, than a very quick rod on a very, very heavy line. The better you are technically, I'd say, the quicker you go, because it'll give you, you know, much greater output for less effort. If you're not good technically, I would say to go for a mid-flex rod. Don't spend a fortune, because you'll be probably eBaying that stuff before too long, because you'll want to... The deal on the foreshore is work less hard for more. Don't be knackered. You shouldn't be knackered coming in after 6 or 7 hours of casting, because don't get me wrong, you are casting, because you're forced to cover ground very comprehensively. So the less you cast, the more you fish. The more you cast, the less tired you get. Better, faster action rods will definitely give you that as a formula. But whether or not you are able to deal with that, only you can tell me that.
And would you advise carrying a range of AFTMA weights of lines?
If you're using an AFTM rated 8-weight rod, which would be a standard piece of equipment for us, we would use naturally a weight forward tapered line, and we would want to weight that. So an 8-weight rod would attract an 8-weight line. Many of my reels, they've got various lines on them, and according to what the wind conditions are like, if it's windy, I'll just put +1 on it. Every rod has a standard deviation, or it has the ability to be able to handle very easily 2 lines heavier and 2 lines less. The most important thing for a client to understand is if you're loading a rod up with a line heavier, so let's say I was using a 9-foot, 8-weight fast taper rod and the wind was up and I wanted to put a 9-weight intermediate line on to go and approach the beach, you are effectively overstressing the carbon graphite material of the tip if you pick up the required amount of line that it's gauged for, which is 30 or 32 feet, because you're picking up physically more weight with the tip. All you have to do is to pick up less line, which means you're compensating. So let's say, I don't know, an 8-weight might be 220 grains of weight. A 9-weight at 32 feet would be maybe 240. So you're overstressing it by 20 grains of weight. In order to negate that, pick up 28 feet, not 32 feet. If you didn't have an 8-weight line, you think, oh, I've only got a 7-weight line, I've only got an 8-weight rod. Well, you've got to pick up more to load the rod. Generally, let's load a rod according to its AFTM rating, and a weight forward will help you cast. And it's not about presentation. So you don't need a double taper line. Shooting heads, if you can handle it, absolutely. Loads of reels of mine are shooting heads for those guys that can handle it. Are you getting more for less? But as starting, let's use a weight forward, 8-weight, saltwater line. Remember, saltwater is denser, so the sink rate is slower on a freshwater line used in the sea. That's the only difference. You've got a plasma side coating, which will probably be slightly thicker, because it's a very robust line used in a very harsh environment. And those lines are developed to be abused. But generally speaking, a 3 IPS saltwater line is sinking quicker than a 3 IPS freshwater line.
What then would you suggest as being the best range of sink speeds and capabilities to cover all potential situations?
Wading, intermediate 1 inch per second. Nothing too special. Fish are going to be, you know, in an area of water or a water column, probably, like I said, no more between 6 and 7 feet deep, if that. So what a pleasure it is to work with a relatively light line, density of sinking. And also you're using smaller flies like Klaus and Minnes, which got a Dumbo head, they're doing the work for you. On the drift, it depends on how deep your ground is. I mean, we can work 30 to 40 feet of water. And if you're going to have any chance of getting down in 30 to feet of water in the right time period on the drift with wind on your back, even if I'm helming you down, you've got to have a heavy line. But a general benchmark would be 3 to 4 IPS, inches per second, weight forward. That would do it fine, absolutely fine, no problem at all. If you want to really go dredging it, then we've all got the Gemtini dredging lines, but they're not actually very pleasurable to use.
And what, from your experience, would make the contents of a good bass fly box?
There's a number of pans you probably don't want to leave home without, I would say, with my experience. Clouse and minnows, red and white, black, grey and white, chartreuse and white, standard patterns, according to light penetration. So you go down there, remember the light will change according to the cloud, according to the day. That changes over time. Don't just, you know, sort of like, you know, sieve the water for 6 hours with one pattern. For instance, many occasions that we've been working a pattern, we've changed, and suddenly black is definitely doing some damage. But certainly Clouse and minnows in 4 different shades, in 2 different sizes. There was one occasion last year where it took us an hour and a half to match the hatch, and I was struggling to find a fly small enough. And this was with quite average size fish, about 2.5 to 3 pounds. And they had been preoccupied with very small 15mm bait that they're trapped in. And I found 2 great, what I call great ghosts, which are grey and white Clouse and minnows of a number 6, which is only 15mm long. We had 125 fish on those 2 patterns before we didn't get any more hookups. Lucky we had those 2 small patterns. So a couple of, I would say 4 colours in 2 different sizes in the Clouse and minnows. And then in the dredging section, I start at a 2.0 and I go up to a 4.0 hook, which would on hackle size be anywhere between 3 and 5 inches in length when we're working offshore. Bait tends to be bigger, without a shadow of doubt. And once again, you're trying to match the hatch. But certainly a deceiver, a flat wing, cockroach patterns, which are the tarpon patterns, which have jungle cock tied into their arses, which are fantastic. When you look at cockroach patterns with jungle cock tied into the hackle, it looks like tiger prawn. It looks like crustacean. And the grizzle hackle is a squirrel tail, as far as I can tell, which almost inflates the whole pattern. It gets saturated and it pulses. When you see a traditional cockroach coming through the water, it looks a lot larger in the water than it does, because the hackle is so fine that it looks like a real meal ticket. And they would be certainly some of the patterns that I would feel naked if I was accessing a market and suddenly realized I'd forgotten my crustacean box, or indeed my tarpon box.
What would you advise in terms of line sink and lure retrieve rates?
Well, let's start with the strip rate. Let's not see any nymph fishing. Let's not see any figure of eighting it. Generally speaking, a bass is an aggressive predator, and you should be trying to escape from its predatory path, not oblivious to the point when it's there. So I would say a very fluid strip rate of a full metre and a half. So when you are stripping, let's have your tip down, and let's see you go straight up to the guide ring and straight back, 5 to 6 feet. But keep in contact with the fly. What you want to do is you need constant tension on your line, and move your tip around with the tidal drift, so you're constantly in contact with the fly. You should be pointing your rod tip directly at the fish's mouth, which is why we don't spoil them on the leader material. So if I'm using 18-pound monofilament, it's got an amount of elasticity in it. The reason why we're choosing that is because if a fish hits you when you're in the middle of your retrieve, it's hitting you at the weakest point of your leader. There is no give in fluorocarbon. It's already been pre-stretched and hardened. It does a great job, but when you get a bang, what you tend to find is you've got a break. And some retailers are very unscrupulous about how long they keep it on the shelf. It gets very brittle under ultraviolet light. So I've always had a preference to using monofilament up to 20 pounds, which has probably got about 3mm of elasticity left in it. So when you get hit, you've actually got a rubber band shock leader. Above 20 pounds doesn't seem to make any difference. It's so strong anyway. But when I'm saying point your tip on your retrieve straight at the fish, if you lose the angle of that and the fly comes round and the fish hits you, remember the rod tip is acting as a shock absorber. Now, you're going to hook the fish because your hook is sharp, but you're not going to embed the barb into its jaw, which is bone. So, although you're fishing directly at the tip, pointing at the fish, every time the fish impacts you, what you're going to find, it will shake its head very angrily at you. You are at risk from breaking, but every time it shakes its head at you, it's embedding the barb into its own mouth, which is why fly rodders always keep their tips down, very similar to salmon anglers. Don't strike the fish. Don't put any compression on your rod. Wait for the fish to shake itself on. And when you feel that it's been shaking itself on for 5 or 6 seconds, take the tension up and then you've got the shock absorbing material of the carbon graphite, which is then doing the job. If you do it too prematurely, you'll have the fish on for 10-15 seconds and it will be a memory. I will guarantee you it will shake the hook out. So the strip rate is fluid, and the direction of the strip rate is also imperative. And remember, your kit is fairly robust. We're not talking about using 3 or 4 pound leader material. We're talking about 15 to 20 pound leader material. So it's on your side to start with.
And for the weaker casters out there who still nonetheless might like to give it a go, there is salvation on offer there too.
We try and help the client get the most out of his day. What tends to happen is the client will come out and he will say to you, if it's a new client, I've been fishing for a long time, I'm absolutely fine. He'll then go out with another person who has been fishing for a long time in our environment and suddenly realise that technically he's not proficient. That client then revisits you and says, can you teach me what that guy was doing, please? And there's nothing you can do to convince a client that he will find it difficult. It's almost a, I have to experience a failure in order to understand how good or bad or indifferent I am. When it comes to the casting courses, they are purely double hauling. We tend to layer up the course to the point we build your confidence with the correct kit. So you mean you're coming from a trout background, you're probably using 5 or 6 weights max. If you're a reservoir guy, 7 weight, you're on the sea with me, you're going to be using an 8 weight, which could be a bit of a shocker for you anyway. So the kit's bigger, larger, more heavy. But I want to try and build your line speed up and your tip speed to the point you can project a better than average line. So that the courses are there to layer up your confidence and for you to understand exactly how to do that, of which we have a large area of ground. It occurs at my home address in a paddock over lawn grass in a controlled environment, so you haven't got to worry about wind and tide. So if you suddenly realise, okay, fine, no, I need to know how to double haul, and it is a bit of a eureka moment when you double haul because it's not natural to do the compression on the non-rod hand. Really, it's a question of getting you up to the point where you're proficient to go and approach the foreshore safely and to get the most out of that. So double hauling is a specialist area that we try and convert to other people understanding. The courses take anywhere between, I say, 3 and 4 hours. Most people would say, okay, fine, I have a rate card of X and we do it per hour. You can't actually, the problem is with double hauling, you've got to embed the muscle memory. And the worse it is, the longer you've been fishing. I've got to unwind you like a bad golf swing, and then I've got to bolt you back up. Now, I have a hybrid cast because I'm a saltwater fly rodder. But if you're a total novice, you're much easier to teach than you are somebody who's been fishing for 30 years because all the muscle memory is set, and therefore it's all embedded on you anyway. So the first part of the call, you might find there's an hour and a half unwinding you. There's another hour and a half of winding you back up, and there's another hour at the end that embeds it. The guy that's never picked up a fly rod before is usually done in 2 hours. So once again, it's a loaded question which comes down to how much you've done yourself.
For more on the topic, parts 1, 2 and 4 cover an introduction to bass fishing, the concept of fly fishing for bass, then bass and bass conservation respectively.